Edwin Moses has joined us on Sports Byline. There was a period of time during his career, and I don't think that this record will ever be broken. For 9 years, he went unbeaten in 122 consecutive races. 107 of them were finals. What is it about that record that Edwin Moses appreciates?
I appreciate, number one, that I did, because I focused on running and winning and really monitoring my training program. It wasn't so much about going out and beating anybody on any given day. The only time I thought about that was race days, and that would be 15, 20 races a year, which comes down to about 15 minutes of running. So my system was to put together all the elements that it would take to be in condition with long distance running, to be flexible, to do the speed work, to do the hurdling technique, to do the physical therapy and everything else that it took to win the race. And when I put those elements together, then I knew I would be able to run and knew what kind of condition I was in. But you never really know until that first race. And once you get a couple of races under your belt, then you have a lot more control about of the energy it takes to run certain times. So I concentrated on my own training. I was never thinking about beating anybody on a day-to-day basis. I never thought about the competition. And even in the race, I thought about there's 10 hurdles in lane six. I'm in lane six. That was my focus. And I knew that if I did what I was supposed to do and was capable of, I probably should win the race. And I did it for almost 10 years using that philosophy. And I think made it easier because I didn't have to worry about competition. I didn't have to worry about who I was going to be, what they were going to do. And in a hurdle race, you can do that because the hurdle is an actual barrier that can hinder you and help you. And I used the hurdle as an ally for all those years.
You know, it's very interesting because you know the adage, KISS, keep it simple, stupid, but it seems like that's what you did. You kept it simple, that you focused only on the things that you can control. Am I correct?
Yeah, you're correct. And I had I wouldn't say it was a wonderful time of practice because it hurt a lot. And, you know, it takes a lot to go in and do the kind of workouts I was doing. But I enjoyed the lifestyle of going out and working out, challenging myself every day and running a 500 meters to within 3/4 of a second and being able to do that on cue and do it when it counted in practice. So that was pretty much what I was into. It wasn't even about the competition. I never thought about that. But I knew that if I did what I had planned to do, the training that I laid out, then I should be able to perform. And fortunately, I didn't have any major injuries or anything else to keep that from happening. So I had 10 years of Zen moments, if I could say that, in terms of my competition, my outlook, and really enjoying what I did on a day-to-day basis without being distracted by anything or anyone.
How hard was it to limit those distractions, given the fact that I was reading stories like everybody else in Sports Illustrated? There were television pieces being done on you on this record as it continued to grow. I would think that would be difficult to shut all of that out and then just focus in on what you had to do in the next race.
Well, I would usually plan them when it was convenient for me. I wasn't into letting anything interrupt my workouts. And for me, there was nothing. When I go out to the track, I'm like solitude. I need quiet. I need peace of mind. There's no one else out there. It's 8:30 in the morning. You know, I can feel the breeze from the ocean, from Irvine, Laguna Beach, and everything is quiet. So the TV crews, all that became a lot later, but I would get my workout in Monday through Thursday and maybe do TV, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But I would not let it. I didn't plan to go out to the track and have a full-scale Edwin Moses type of workout on a day in which people were coming to observe and write. It just wasn't happening. So I always did that on off days when it was convenient for me and when I didn't have to kill myself in practice.
Records, of course, or at least strings, come to an end at some particular point. What was the feeling you had after it finally came to an end?
I wasn't disappointed at all because I ran a very fast race early in the season. And most people don't know, I actually ruptured a disc in my back the previous year in 1986. So I was struggling with, I didn't even know it at that time, Ron, that my disc was ruptured, and probably glad that I didn't, because I'm sure it would have affected everything. But I managed to get myself back in 1987. Still was in a lot of pain and struggling with the workouts, and ran the fastest time that I ever run that early. So I wasn't disappointed at all. And the other big factor was that we had the Olympic trials, the trials for the World Championships coming up within 10 days of that track meet. And so my focus was on getting ready for that. It wasn't about worrying about why I lost or anything. People lose races. That's a part of track and field. In order to get to the top, you will lose. And you'll lose at many different levels. And I have been fortunate enough to not lose, but I had a what I felt was a good reason for not running well that day. And it didn't bother me at all.
One of the things that I've always respected about you, Edwin, is that after the career was over, you continued to give back to sports and give back to society. And I know you're involved with the Laurier Sport for Good Foundation USA. Tell me what they do.
Well, Laurier is a I've been the chairman, the sole chairman of the organization going back to the year 2000. It's a worldwide global philanthropic organization. It's sponsored by Mercedes-Benz globally, and more importantly, Mercedes-Benz USA, where we have our U.S. foundation, and a company called Richemont, which is the parent company of Mont Blanc and Cartier and Van Cleef & Arpels and Panerai Watches and IWC. So we have very good sponsors. There's 43 other people, just like myself, that are members of the Laurier World Sports Academy, including Nadia Comaneci and Martina Navratilova and Marcus Allen, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Seth Coe, and Kip Keno. And the list goes on to include top stars in cricket, rugby, soccer, tennis, and golf. We have Alberto Chamba in skiing. So it's a fantastic organization. And we are essentially the board of directors running the foundation. And we raise money through our corporate sponsors and also through World Sports Awards, which we've had for 12 years, which is called the Oscars of Sports. And all the money that we raise, we use to sponsor projects to help kids. And we do that by using sport as a tool for social change. We're not trying to coach them or teach them how to play any sport, but we use the sport just to get the kids to show up. We started out in the year 2000 with just an idea. And 2001, we had six projects in four different countries. And we've grown today to the point where our annual turnover is about 15 million pounds globally. And we have over 100 projects in 43 countries. So all we do is use our sports celebrity and stars to generate awareness to help kids, and we've helped over 1.5 million kids in all those countries. It's a fantastic organization, and I've learned a lot and given a lot, and everyone really enjoys it.
We only have about 90 seconds left, but one of the things I noted was that you were the first athlete to pioneer the acceptance of controlled professionalism in athletics. Are you concerned about the professionalism and the message it sends, especially to young athletes?
No, I don't think there's anything wrong with track and field being a professional sport. I think it has to be what it needs to be taken into consideration is which athletes, how much time are you going to spend trying to become a professional athlete versus getting your education. And as you know, in some sports, in basketball, football, that's a huge problem where a kid can grow up thinking, well, I'm going to be the next Michael Jordan or the next LeBron James, and not even think about education. And the moment that you get cut or injured, You're just a statistic in terms of professional sports. So, and the commonality that I know amongst, especially the members of the Global World Sports Awards, everybody's well educated. People have paid attention, have become really very good businessmen, and so forth. So, sports is just a vehicle. Education is the key.
In about 30 seconds, what do you think your legacy in track and field is?
Well, I think bringing professionalism into it, that's probably the thing that I would be hopefully noted for. And also the winning streak and being a great champion. To me, that means a lot.
Edwin, I want to thank you very much. I've always enjoyed our conversations because they're articulate, they're insightful, and I think people hear the message, and it's a strong message. Thanks a lot, Edwin. You're welcome back here anytime on Sports Byline.
Thanks, Ron. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Edwin Moses with us, the former Olympian. He won the gold medal in the 400-meter hurdles in Montreal, also in Los Angeles. He also won a bronze medal. And then for 9 years, he had that unbelievable string in which he won 122 consecutive races. We'll take a break, come back on the other side as we continue across the country and around the world with you on Sports Byline.